Good morning to everyone on the call. Thank you for joining us to review Almirall's Q3 results. I hope everyone is safe and remaining healthy. As usual, you can find the slides to this call on the investors page of our website at almirall.com. Moving to slide two, I would like to remind you that information presented in this call contains forward-looking statements that involve known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors that may cause actual results to differ materially. With that, please advance to slide three. Presenting today, we have Gianfranco Nazzi, Chief Executive Officer, Mike McClellan, Chief Financial Officer, and Karl Ziegelbauer, Chief Scientific Officer. Gianfranco will review the quarter business performance and the growth drivers. Karl will provide you with detail on the pipeline before passing to Mike to review the financials. Gianfranco will then make the closing comments before opening up for a Q&A session. I would like to pass you over to our CEO, Gianfranco Nazzi.
Thanks, Pablo, for the introduction, and good morning to everyone on the call. I am pleased to say that the business is continuing to perform well, with a solid performance from the core business and the continuation of a good momentum from our growth drivers and recent launches. Despite a slow July and August impacted by COVID, we have seen a recovery in September, especially in the U.S. We are therefore very confident in meeting our upgraded 2021 guidance provided at the half year, tightening the core EBITDA range by increasing the base level to 200 million from 195 million. To highlight our growth driver performance, we continue to see strong performance from Ilumetri, with excellent momentum from the anti-IL-23 class, where Ilumetri has gained market share and is gaining traction in France, Spain, and Italy, which are contributing to the overall growth. Seysara has had an improvement in TRX market share year to date based on the new microbiology label. Since we launched Klisyri in the U.S., we are receiving positive feedback from dermatologists and patients, and we have seen positive trend in recent weeks with good progress on the coverage. I will provide further details on the growth drivers shortly, but overall, good momentum despite the impact of COVID, particularly in terms of accessing new patients in some geographies. The late-stage pipeline is progressing well. As you have seen, we provided the results of lebrikizumab phase III data in August. We continue to work with our partner, Eli Lilly, towards the 2023 European launch. Karl will explain more in this later in presentation, as well as the detail of the recent European approval and launch of Klisyri in Germany and the U.K. Furthermore, Wynzora has been approved in seven countries, and we are finally in preparation to launch early next year. We have strong midterm sales growth potential from our innovative pipeline to unlock the huge potential to grow in our core medical dermatology business. Lastly, as you will see in September, we issued 300 million euro in new bond that we'll use to repay the 250 million euro of convertible bonds that come to due date at the end of the year. Mike will run you through details in a simplified capital structure later in the presentation. As you can see, it has been a busy quarter for us. Let's move now to the performance of our growth driver, starting with the strong momentum of Ilumetri. As you know, psoriasis carries a high disease burden, and patients can have a very significant impacted quality of life. Therefore, it is important that any therapy provide long-term control and treatment strategy to reduce the disease burden and improve the quality of life. The slides show you the market dynamic in the anti-IL-23 class in Germany. Here you can see clearly the strong uptake in the anti-IL-23 class, having increased to 39% market share of the new patient within the biologics. In our view, this is a reflection of physician beliefs in the strong efficacy profile, with a key attribute being a proven latest lasting efficacy with convenient dosing and with no significant safety concern. While there is tough competition within the anti-IL-23 class in Germany, Ilumetri has a strong market share, which has increased to 29% with the class, and in August has achieved its highest monthly market share. This continued positive momentum is due to Ilumetri adding a compelling product profile with long-term safety efficacy, very good tolerance, and deliver maintained control for psoriasis patients, and easy to use as the key attribute. This superior profile, combined with a quarterly dosing regimen, will continue to support the growth of the product in the winning class. As you can see, Ilumetri has had a strong performance with sales growing sequentially as the new country launches gain momentum and contribute to the overall growth to achieve a net sales of over 20 million euros. Despite the softer August, due to the seasonality, it resulted in lower growth of quarter three versus quarter two. The level of seasonality was not as evident last year due to a lower level of net sales. I would like to highlight that in September and October has seen an acceleration, and in particular October, which has the highest level of net sales of 8.2 million euros. I have already mentioned the good performance in key markets, Germany, that has continued to drive sales growth. In addition, there has been positive momentum and contribution of new country launches like France, Spain, Italy, Austria, and Switzerland, and our latest launch in Portugal, which is really good achievement and validation of the potential of this product. We remain fully confident in its growth potential going forward, with data for September being very encouraging, continuing the good momentum of Ilumetri. With that, I would like to turn next to focus on two key near-term product launches in Europe, Klisyri for the treatment of actinic keratosis and Wynzora, a cream for the treatment of plaque psoriasis. We are very pleased to announce that the U.K. and Germany are the first two European countries where Klisyri is available for prescription. The product has been approved for the treatment of the actinic keratosis by the U.K. Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency and by the European Commission. Klisyri is doing very well in Germany, and for the first month, we have achieved 5,200 prescriptions and more than half of the wholesalers having already placed orders. The rollout of Klisyri in Europe enhances our leadership in the European market, where we believe we are the number one player for the treatment of the actinic keratosis. Market growth is anticipated to be the driver for several factors, including aging population and the rising prevalence of the disease, in part due to the environmental factors such as increased sun exposure. It is estimated that approximately one in 10 adults in Europe suffer from actinic keratosis. This is one of the most common diagnoses made by the dermatologists in Europe, with a prevalence of approximately 18% of the population and higher for adults over the age of 60. In this context, the commercialization of Klisyri is an important addition to dermatologists' option to treat actinic keratosis and marks another milestone achieved by Almirall in its mission to bring new and innovative solutions for actinic keratosis patients around the world. Having launched in Germany and the U.K., we are on track with the rollout in the rest of the European market. Launch meetings have been positive, given this is a new therapeutic option for a short duration and has a good tolerability profile that will significantly improve the actinic keratosis lesion of our patients. Now move into another product launch in Europe, Wynzora. Wynzora is the only aqueous calcipotriene betamethasone dipropionate combination cream being developed using PAD formulation technology for adult patients suffering from mild to moderate psoriasis. This technology is highly tolerated even in sensitive tissues, with an important feature of the product. Preparation of the European launch is in the final stages, with the launch expected in early 2022, following approval in Spain, U.K., France, Norway, Austria, Denmark, and Czech Republic. This is a decentralized procedure which requires approval country by country. The product has a clear strategic fit within our portfolio, providing a full range of psoriasis products that covers the patient journey, strengthening our position in the European psoriasis market. Almirall will be the only pharma company with a full portfolio of psoriasis products: Ilumetri, a biologic systemic treatment, Skilarence, an oral systemic treatment, and Wynzora, a topical product. With key market introduction, 2022 is a very busy year for our teams, with the rollout of Klisyri and Wynzora, two very important growth drivers for Almirall, with more to follow in the short to mid-term. Now, let's take a look at the U.S. product, starting with Klisyri, which we launched in February of this month. We are pleased with the uptake, where Klisyri continued to make steady gains month after month, with a positive trend in recent weeks following seasonality in the summer months. We are starting to see better access after the summer versus the difficulties in accessing physicians due to the COVID-19, which has challenged the uptake of the new product. The product has gained penetration in the actinic keratosis topical market, with more than 15,000 prescriptions having been generated since the launch, with a market share above 2.5%. Let me remind you that actinic keratosis is the second most common diagnosis made by dermatologists in the U.S., where the existing topical therapies are associated with significant side effects such as pain, inflammatory reaction, hypopigmentation, and scarring. The strategy has always been to generate a lot of user experience, and most encouragingly is the feedback from the dermatologists. Patients are experiencing the strong immediate benefit by addressing the tolerability limitation of existing treatment. Klisyri offers a good product profile, which represents a significant step forward in the treatment of the actinic keratosis due to its short treatment protocol, a once-daily application for 5 days, proven efficacy, and good safety profile. In this context, we believe that Klisyri is well-placed within the market, where more than 2,000 healthcare professionals have been prescribing Klisyri since the launch, and the product has access to more than 70 million covered lives within the commercial space, where we are targeting more than 100 million by the year-end. This will be a key focus area for our strategy to gain payer coverage to drive sales volume. We are in active discussion with multiple PBMs to increase the commercial coverage to this year. Related to this matter, Medicare Part D is expected in 2022. Access is also making good progress, as we differentiate Klisyri from what is already available in the market based on efficacy, tolerability, and convenience. Promotional efforts are on the aisle beside prescriber, which should reinforce the acceleration of the performance of Klisyri. Our expectation is that we should be able to gain a good level of market share as dermatologists are seeking for new options to treat the actinic keratosis patient, and we will continue to support the launch in the U.S. Now, let's take a look at Seysara. Our strategy remains the same to rebuild the TRX and increase the market share as reps increase their face-to-face interaction with physicians once we see normalization from COVID-19. As you can see, the third quarter has continued to make modest but gains on the TRX. We will continue to dedicate resources to further differentiate Seysara based on the microbiology label, which is an important factor that we are able to leverage with physicians and is really differentiate the product from the older generic that continue to dominate the market. We are focusing our effort on increasing market access as we continue to increase the commercial coverage plan with several PBMs. We are aiming to exit this year with 54% of access. Our strategy for access is making good progress as we focus on increasing our interaction with prescribers that were actively prescribing pre-COVID. We think this is a very good product with good potential, and we continue to work hard on our execution plan to rebuild the TRX and market share. With that, I will pass over to Carl to update you on the pipeline.
Thank you, Gianfranco. Here you will see that we have made excellent progress on the pipeline. Firstly, we are very excited having announced the top-line readout of the phase 3 clinical trials of lebrikizumab, which I want to take you through later in the presentation. Furthermore, as Gianfranco has already discussed, the approval of Klisyri in Europe and the successful launch into the UK and German market. In parallel, we are preparing the EU launch of Wynzora, which I will elaborate on shortly. For Seysara China, we will work towards the start of the phase 3 trials as planned, having already received the acceptance of our clinical trial application. We think this is an interesting opportunity, and we will update on how we go to market as this develops. And finally, efinaconazole in Europe having already been approved in other countries, the plan is to use as much as possible existing studies, for example, the US phase 3 data, to get approval in Europe. We are already working towards the pre-submission meeting with regulatory authorities in the coming months and will update you on the feedback from those meetings. Finally, we will initiate the Klisyri large field study this quarter to make it even more competitive product. We expect to have a submission in mid to late 2023. Once we have the large field approved, this will be the second inflection point for growth. And will be even more effective in competing with generics such as 5-FU. Furthermore, we are looking at additional indications. We will update you when we have a solid plan. As you can see, we are making good progress on the pipeline, and we are on the right track to strengthen our leadership position in medical dermatology. While we continue to look at external opportunity within our key markets, which complement our portfolio, we have a strong midterm sales growth potential from our innovative pipeline to unlock the huge potential to grow in our core medical dermatology business. With that, I would like to turn the focus on our exciting opportunity we have with lebrikizumab in atopic dermatitis. Go to the next. Atopic dermatitis is an immune-mediated chronic skin condition with a significant impact on the well-being and quality of life of patients. Patients with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis have reported to have a larger impact on quality of life than patients with psoriasis, with a condition occurring at any age, but typically starting in childhood and then changes severity over time. Prevalence of atopic dermatitis is very high in pediatric population, and it could be as high as 20% with all grades of severity. The atopic dermatitis market is expansive, growing, and diverse. Despite recent treatment advances, there remains a large unmet need to provide new options to patients that provide effective and well-tolerated treatment options. The patient numbers with moderate to severe disease are large and growing, and the penetration of biologics is still extremely low. It is estimated that it should have over 5 million patients suffering with atopic dermatitis in Europe by 2026, of which nearly 4 million will receive treatment. We estimate about 11 to 14% of this population is going to get a new treatment. Thereby, about 1 million of these patients will be treated with new therapeutics modality. This remains a significant market opportunity with high unmet medical need. We expect the market to grow going forward, and we believe lebrikizumab will be an important new medicine for patients, as there is a clear need for new and differentiated therapies, as several currently available treatment options are broad modulators of inflammatory pathway, which can often result in significant side effects for patients. With lebrikizumab in our pipeline, a potentially best-in-class IL-13 antibody, it gives Almirall the unique opportunity to help these patients live a better life. The development schedule remains on track, with submission to the EMA expected in 2022 and subsequent approval and release estimated to be obtained in 2023 in the EU. Let me now explain in more detail the significance of the top-line results from the two monotherapy studies. The phase III trial is an important milestone in our clinical development program for lebrikizumab, a medicine that we believe has the potential to be best-in-class IL-13 treatment and reaffirms our steadfast commitment to the dermatology community worldwide. ADvocate1 and ADvocate2 are ongoing 52-week randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled parallel group phase III studies designed to evaluate lebrikizumab as monotherapy in adult and adolescent patients. Adolescent patients means age 12 to less than 18 years of age and weighing at least 40 kilograms, both with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis. The primary efficacy endpoints were assessed at week 16 in the two studies and were measured by an investigator global assessment, IGA score of clear or almost clear skin, with a reduction of at least 2 points from baseline at week 16, and at least a 75% or greater change from baseline in the Eczema Area and Severity Index, EASI score at week 16. The full study results from ADvocate1 and ADvocate2 will be disclosed at future scientific congresses in 2022. Data from a phase III combination study with topical steroids called ADhere of lebrikizumab in patients with atopic dermatitis will be available later this year. These studies are part of the lebrikizumab phase III program, which consists of five key ongoing global studies, including two monotherapy studies and a combination study, as well as long-term extension called ADjoin and adolescent open-label trials. The trial is called ADore. Lebrikizumab has the potential to be best-in-class therapy for treating AD in a class where it has been published that AD is an IL-13 dominant disease. Lebrikizumab is designed to block IL-13 signaling but does not block endogenous IL-13 regulation, which we believe is an important feature, as for its known anti-inflammatory properties. Finally, Almirall is studying now various options for phase III trials for lebrikizumab, and we will communicate this to the market once we have made a decision. With that, I will pass over to Mike to run you through the financials.
Thanks, Karl. Looking at slide 18, as Gianfranco mentioned in the introduction, we've seen a solid performance with growth from the core business through Q3, and we're very confident in meeting our upgraded 2021 guidance with a tightened core EBITDA outlook. We have seen good momentum in Q3 for our recently launched products, including in the U.S. Year to date, core net sales increased 6% and core EBITDA increased over 20% year-on-year, driven by positive contribution from growth drivers and a strong EU dermatology performance. In Q3, we saw a gross margin of 67%, which we see as a good proxy for the next few years based on our current mix and the fact that our recently launched products have royalty commitments to our partners. Year to date, with the addition of one-offs, divestments, and other milestones received during the year, we achieved a core gross margin of 68.5%. In terms of OpEx, SG&A has increased in line with our expectations to support recent launches of Klisyri in the U.S. and EU markets, the Ilumetri rollout, and some normalization of spending post-COVID. The overall outcome is strong growth of our core EBITDA year to date of 164 million. We've also seen very strong operating cash flow reaching 161 million year to date, resulting in a very healthy balance sheet as we finish the quarter at 1.3x net debt to EBITDA ratio. This quarter, we've also successfully completed the issuance of 300 million in senior notes due 2026. I will elaborate on our simplified capital structure later in the presentation. Let me now move on to give you more detail behind these numbers. On slide 19, here you can see the dynamics of the core business in the EU and the U.S. markets year to date. The European dermatology business has had a very strong performance, while there's also been an increase of our non-derma products compared to 2020. As you can see, the other EU line year-on-year has increased, but this has been influenced by the Flatoril divestment earlier in this year, offset by lower cough and cold product sales. Moving to our U.S. business, similar to many of our peers, we are still seeing a negative impact from COVID, particularly in terms of capturing new patients. As previously communicated, the generic impact of Aczone has been annualized. However, we expect to see additional competitors by the end of this year, which will erode most of the remaining sales in 2022. Overall, our portfolio has limited patent expiry risk going forward in the near term outside of Efficib in Spain, which will be impacted in late 2022. Additionally, rest of the world general medicine has seen a decline year on year, mainly driven by Immunorix and other products that had higher demand during the pandemic in 2020. While we've seen some improvement in doctor consultations and better patient flow, COVID continues to influence the business, and we will continue to monitor this situation as we move forward. Similarly, we are monitoring interactions between reps and doctors to see how it will evolve. It has been slow for reps getting back in to see physicians, which will take a little longer to get back to pre-COVID levels as things start to normalize. So moving to slide 20, looking at the year-to-date dermatology sales, we registered a strong performance in Europe driven by the growth of Ilumetri, as well as strong trends for Ciclopoli and our Decoderm franchise. The U.S. business continues to be impacted by COVID with a slower intake of new launches and softer demand in some areas. However, we have seen some improvement in recent months. Most notable is Seysara versus last year, where we will continue to work hard to rebuild the TRX and increase market share. While COVID-related restrictions are easing in the U.S., we anticipate a slow but steady progress of patients visiting their doctors at a normalized rate. The other U.S. products were affected by a returns accrual adjustment in the 2020 numbers. I would also like to highlight the consignment and royalties from authorized generics that are included in the brand sales for 21 and 22. Consignment income is not a large influencing factor and is a common strategy for managing patients with little or limited payer coverage. So as we move on to slide 21, the core net sales evolution, here are a couple things I'd like to pull out for you. The existing portfolio net sales increased by around $15 million year to date. As you can see, the growth drivers had a good contribution during the year driven by Ilumetri in Europe and Seysara and Klisyri in the U.S. However, the rest of our U.S. business took a hit of nearly $12 million year-on-year. Moving to slide 22, I've already highlighted the key factors of the sales performance, so let me continue with our focus on the core business by running you through the rest of the P&L. SG&A is increasing in line with our expectations as we continue to invest in product launches, and especially comparing to the first 9 months of 2020, where there was low spend due to COVID restriction. The percentage of R&D versus net sales is low, but will accelerate as we start the Klisyri large field studies and prepare for reimbursement-related trials for lebrikizumab. R&D spend will accelerate not only in Q4, but going forward into 2022. Year-to-date, we achieved a gross margin of 68.5%, which benefited from the contribution of a favorable product mix and one-offs. As mentioned earlier, going forward, excluding one-offs, the 67% we saw in Q3 standalone is a pretty good proxy for the gross margin in the coming years. Overall, the increase in core sales and the overall spending led to a core EBITDA increasing 20% from last year, reaching $164 million for the 9 months. The reconciliation at the end of the P&L adds to the deferred income, which is $15 million year-to-date, another income of $1 million from AstraZeneca. Slide 23, continuing down the P&L, the normalized net income, excluding the impairment impacts, results with a slightly down versus last year, finishing the 9 months with a normalized earnings per share of 34 cents. The negative net income is affected by the impairments announced at the half-year results. If we move on to slide 24, taking a look at the balance sheet, there are quite a few comments provided on the slide, so I will discuss the high yield bond issuance shortly. So I'll just highlight one of the most important factors. We have a very healthy balance sheet and finished the quarter with a leverage of 1.3 times EBITDA to net debt, which gives us flexibility in the current environment for additional licensing and potential M&A activity. Slide 25, taking a look at the cash flow statement. We delivered very strong operating cash flow results, generating $161 million due to strong operating results after adjusting for the impairments, which is also aided by good control over working capital and net tax refunds. We have made key investments during the year, including the milestone for U.S. commercial launch of Klisyriad and the upfront costs for the acquisition of European rights of Wynzora. The divestment receipts referred to the milestones and royalties collected from AstraZeneca. These have been classified as investing activities due to the reduced focus in our operations. Additionally, we had the disbursement of almost $12 million for a cash dividend in Q2 of 19 cents per share, with some investors choosing the scrip dividend option. On slide 26, as you may have seen, in September, we issued $300 million in new unsecured senior bonds that we will use to repay the $250 million of convertible bonds that come due by the end of the year. The new bonds bear an annual interest of 2.125%, payable semi-annually. Additionally, this quarter, we have repaid $150 million of bank loans using existing cash balances. The high level of interest from investors for our bond issuance resulted in orders of multiple times our request, which we see as an acknowledgement of a sign that the investor community recognizes our strong performance and the significant growth prospects of the company in the coming years. We are pleased with the successful outcome, which gives Almirall a simplified capital structure by the end of this year, with no risk of future equity dilution. This gives us flexibility and a strong balance sheet to support options for inorganic growth opportunities in the future. Finally, to conclude the financials, we are tightening our core EBITDA guidance to a range of $200 to $215 million based on our strong results so far in 2021. We aim to end at the top end of the range, but leave some room for continuing COVID uncertainties. This is aligned with the strong operational performance as our core business continues to perform well, driven by recently launched products. We will continue to monitor the COVID impact and see how the possible variants are going to play out. We expect COVID-19 to continue to have some impact, but have a progressive normalization through next year. And with that, I hand it back to Gianfranco to conclude the presentation.
Thanks, Mike. So as you have clearly heard from us this morning, we have delivered a strong operational performance as the core business continues to perform well and in line with our expectations. We are therefore confident in meeting our upgraded guidance for 2021 and then tightening the core EBITDA range. This comes as excellent momentum continues into the quarter four, where we are confident in Almirall growth drivers will continue their strong growth trajectory as we continue to support the recent launches. Furthermore, as detailed by Carl, we are progressing well with our existing innovative late-stage pipeline as we continue to execute on our transformation of the company by preparing the business for important launches to support the future growth prospect. The coming months will be very busy for us. Our team will be the initiation of a very important clinical trials in key market introduction. Additionally, on the execution, I am pleased with the performance of our European growth drivers, having achieved a record month of €8.2 million net sales for Ilumetri in October, and continuing its acceleration for Klisyri in Germany, where 5,200 prescriptions have been made in the first month, with more than half of the wholesalers having already placed order, and 95% of them already placed reorders. Finally, Almirall is well positioned for the long-term growth by unlocking the value of the late-stage pipeline. This growth will come from the increasing contribution from the current and future growth drivers, as well as opportunistic inorganic growth, by leveraging our strong balance sheet and flexible capital structure. With that, Pablo, I hand back to you for the instruction on the Q&A.
Thank you very much, Gianfranco. Jola, back to you for the Q&A, please.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of Matthew Weston from Credit Suisse.
Thank you. Good morning. Two questions to start with, please. Mike, it's around cost trends, and you highlighted the expected acceleration of R&D into 4Q going into 2022, but also the SG&A spend in 3Q was clearly a surprise to investors. So can you just map out how we should think about total OPEX cost going into next year relative to 3Q spending so we can understand the balance of R&D and investment in growth drivers? And then the second question is around gross margin. I think you said that the 67% level seen in 3Q was a good guide for next year and the medium term. I previously recall you discussed improving to 70% as a target. Has that changed? Has that been pushed further out? Or had I misunderstood previously? Thank you.
Yeah, So thanks. First of all, I'll take the gross margin first, and then I'll come back to the rest of the cost. You know, what we're seeing of the 67% is a good proxy going forward. Our near term, especially, you know, given the growth of Ilumetri and the other products, is products that are heavily weighted with royalties from partners. And in the case of something like Ilumetri, the better we do, the higher that percentage will go up. We do, you know, target to get eventually to 70%, but I think it's going to be later out there. It's going to take well into the launch of lebrikizumab to get there. And the difference in why this is kind of shifting is, you know, as we've seen that Seysara is not going to be what we originally thought, that was one of the drivers. We're also seeing that, you know, the overall mix and the pressure on costs is just going to continue. So 67%, at least in the next 2 to 3 years, is probably a good proxy of what we can do with our existing portfolio. When it comes to the other cost trends, clearly we are starting to ramp up the SG&A. We need to invest in the new launches. You're seeing a little bit more of ability to have activity with the physicians and other, you know, promotional activities. We are launching Klisyri, where we've, you know, ramped up France in terms of the Ilumetri launch. As we go into next year, we're going to have spend on Wynzora. We're going to launch Klisyri in more markets. We need to continue to do pre-launch activities for lebrikizumab. So I think we're in a great period of opportunity, and we have a lot of launches in front of us, but it means we're going to have to invest. The same thing on R&D. R&D has been very slow this year, but we will now start to ramp that up. I remind you that lebrikizumab, because it was a partnered deal, all of the R&D has been done by Lilly and Dermira before them up till now. But now we're going to have to start investing in the reimbursement trials for Europe, and they're not going to be inexpensive. We need to give everything we can to this product to make sure that it is the biggest success that it is. So if you take a lot of these trends, you know, I think we've, you know, confident in our upgraded guidance for this year, but as we move into next year, we're going to have, you know, a limited gross margin opportunity to grow in the next couple of years and pressure on SG&A and R&D. So we'll give you the guidance for 2022 when we get into February. But if you take all those trends into consideration, it's going to be you know, a year or two where we're really going to have heavy investment needs in the next couple of years.
Thank you, Mike. We'll jump back into the queue. We'll come back later.
Thanks.
Next question from the line of Neil Alexander from Deutsche Bank.
Hi, how's it going? Can you guys hear me?
Yes, as well.
Just one question for me. I know you touched base on Ilumetri. I'm just wondering if you can give us an update on the EU rollout in a bit more detail. I know you mentioned France and Portugal as such. it'd be good if we can get a bit more information, more granularity as such, and a bit more detail on the progress in markets outside, any other markets outside Germany. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexandra. I will take it. So Ilumetri, as we said, is doing very well. So we got a record month in October with the 8.2 million euros. Of course, Germany is the main driver with 4.8 million, and we got a fantastic market share performance on the IL-23 class with a record of 29%. Good news is also that the IL-23 class is growing very well. They reach a market share of 34%. But nevertheless, also across Europe, we are doing quite well. You were mentioning other countries. For instance, Italy, we sold more than 1 million. Spain, we sold more than 500,000. France, we sold more than 600,000. And also in the UK, with almost 500,000 euros. If you look at the market share across all those different marketing companies, it's growing quite well. The only difference versus Germany is that in Germany, the IL-23 class is outgrowing the market. And so that's the reason why you will not see, you know, the spike that we got in Germany. But we are very pleased with the performance. We have very good feedback from the medical doctor community. And most importantly for the patient, that they really found in Ilumetri a very good drug that answered their unmet need. So very pleased to see the performance here today and more to come. Thank you, Alexander.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Peter Welford from Jefferies.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I've got a few. First of all, just coming back to the margin, just curious if you could, given all the trends you outlined in terms of R&D, SG&A, and gross margin, and obviously given also the exceptional, if you like, one-off sort of income that we had in the first quarter of this year in sales, just, I guess, coming back to your comment you made about 2022 and beyond, is there any reason why we shouldn't be assuming that margins are presumably going to decline the EBITDA margin next year? But then, just curious if you can give us some sort of idea, when you think about it, what sort of time frame we should be thinking about to get back to this year's margin, and the sort of, I guess, longer-term trajectory then you think of for the margin, and what sort of EBITDA margin, perhaps longer-term, you believe is achievable for Almirall as a business. And then if we could just probe on R&D a little bit more. R&D does, I appreciate your comments in terms of all the different studies that are ramping up. Is there any way you could give us, I guess, some sort of feeling in terms of how you think longer term of how we should think about R&D, perhaps the percentage of sales for your business, given obviously some of the volatility we've seen recently? And then if we could just ask on lebrikizumab, is it possible for you to give any timing with regards to when we could see the maintenance results from those studies? And then could you just then outline, it, with regards to your plan for filing, once those maintenance data are in-house, is that then, does that trigger you then filing, or are there some of these other studies that you were mentioning, are any of these going to be required as part of the regulatory package? And how should we think about the sort of filing timeline for lebrikizumab in Europe? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Peter. I'll take the first two, and then we'll let Carl answer the lebrikizumab. So, you know, in terms of the margin profile, you know, with all those pressures I talked about, I think you're just going to have to expect that the core EBITDA margin is going to be in the low to mid-20s the next 2-3 years, and then starting to ramp up post-lebri. You know, we'd still like to target in the outer years getting towards a 30%, but it's probably going to be, you know, quite a few years before we get there, because we need, you know, that bulk of lebrikizumab sales. So clearly there is a ton of opportunity in the short term, but because of the gross margin and the need to invest, it's going to be tough to replicate the current year margins, which of course were aided by some, still a little bit of deferred income that we had trailing, and some one-offs like a product divestment. So, you know, before we start getting back to that upper 20s, it's probably going to be in the 2025 and beyond. Second, when it comes to R&D, you know, historically we've been in the 10 to 11% of sales. This year has been a little bit lower just because we didn't have a lot of projects in the early part of this year, but it'll start to ramp up. So I would expect in the next 2 to 3 years us to probably even go a little bit above that 10 to 11% of sales, just because we have that crunch of investment on the Klisyri large field, the lebrikizumab reimbursement studies, we're still doing some life cycle management for some smaller products. And clearly the company is very interested in innovation. We want to continue to find assets to license in the early stage. We want to continue to really build a leader in medical dermatology going forward. So I would say R&D is going to become more prominent in the coming years in terms of investment pattern. It'll inch up slowly, but we'll probably already start above the historical 10 to 11% in 2022. With that, I'll let Carl take over the lebrikizumab question.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your question. I mean, first of all, we're very excited about the results or the first results from the ADvocate 1 and 2, where we saw that 75% skin clearance in more than half of the patients, and we met and achieved the primary and all key secondary endpoint with this study. These were the 16-week data, and now the study is still ongoing with a so-called maintenance phase until week 52. Here we will see the readout in the first half of next year, followed then by filing to the EU in the second half and hopefully approval 1 year later. We'll have still this year the results of the ADHERE study, the combination with the topical steroids that is forthcoming and will be another data point. And as already mentioned, we are currently discussing so-called phase 3B studies that we need for market access specifically in Europe. This is an ongoing discussion taking into consideration the data we already have and as well as forthcoming data, and we'll keep you informed as this develops.
That's great, thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Alvaro Lindsay from Alantra Equities.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I wanted to have some update on the market size potential of lebrikizumab, and maybe if you could provide some detail on how do you see the recent developments with other competing classes like JAKs and whether you could provide some more, when you expect to provide more update on the potential peak sales and so on.
Thank you, Alvaro. I will start with the potential in peak sales, and then Carla will comment on the JAKs and will comment on the profile of our competitor. So let me make you a very simple, calculation that, can give you an update on how we are building our model. So if you look today in the European market, the patient potential in the atopic dermatitis are, we can say, 5 million. If you just focus on the severe one, you can arrive to almost 500,000. Out of this 500,000 that are the severe patient, we can say that 40% will go under the biologic, that is 200,000, and then the remaining 60% will go into the oral JAKs. So if on the class of the biologic that I said is worth it almost 200,000 patients, we are going to take 20% market share, that means that we are going to achieve something like 40,000 patients for lebrikizumab. That's where our calculations are coming, and that's where we put our peak sales of 450. Again, this is aligned with our phase 2 clinical data, and we are waiting for the final result of our phase 3. But let me now give the chance to Carl to comment on the profile of our competitors.
Yes, thank you, Gianfranco, and thanks for the question. As you know, with respect to the JAK inhibitors, the European and the US regulatory authorities taking slightly different stance. But independent from that, there is a clearly concern on the safety side of this class of inhibitors, and we'll have to see how this is exactly is panning out. Being aware that dermatologists are very concerned about the safety topics in general. We believe that the biologic and specifically with lebrikizumab with the potential being a best-in-class IL-13 inhibitor, we have a great opportunity based on a compelling combination of efficacy, safety, and tolerability, which we believe will be a very competitive profile.
Okay, thank you very much.
Another reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Thibault Boutherin from Morgan Stanley.
Hi, it's Thibault Boutherin from Morgan Stanley. Thank you for taking my question. My first question is on Ilumetri. I mean, we are seeing the introduction of a new strong competitor in the IL-17 class with bimekizumab. So just wondering if you are seeing any change in the market right now in Europe and your view on the evolution of the market share for IL-17 going forward, given that this is quite a serious competitor. So that's the first question. And the second one, just on Klisyri, if you could give us just a bit more color on the timing for the inclusion in Medicare Part D and the type of impact you expect for cell growth. Are we going to see a material step change in growth for Klisyri when this happens, or is it more of an incremental type of progress?
Thank you, Thibault. I will take it. So in terms of Ilumetri, we are very confident on our profile, efficacy and safety profile, and easy to use. And we see several good results across Europe. So as I said, I'm very confident on the future upgrade and growing inside the class of the IL-23. The class of the IL-17 we saw across Europe, that is the class that is declining in favor of the IL-23, and I think that this will be the trend that is going to continue also for the future. In terms of Klisyri, you were asking about the market access, so we are very pleased to see an increase in market access. In this quarter, we saw a market access of 37% that account of almost 70 million of patient lives. And also, we made some timid inroads on Medicare Part B. We got right now 2 million patients on Medicare that represent almost 3% of the total Medicare class. Our plans, of course, is to continue to work very hard, and our strategy is mainly focused on gaining access. And the goal is to achieve by year end something closer to 50% in terms of market access in the US with almost 100 million patient lives. So that's in a nutshell what we are expecting for Klisyri. In terms of sales, we saw the last 3 weeks doing particularly well. We achieved a market share of 2.4 with a weekly patient of 847 in the last week. So, we see a nice trend in growing the number of the patients. So we are pretty confident that this trend is going to continue also for the remaining part of the year, and most importantly, for the months to come. Thank you, Thibault.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Guillermo Sampaio from Kaiser Bank.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. Just a small one, if I might. When you announced the licensing of lebrikizumab, you mentioned that there are exceptions for 450 million peak sales. You were taking consideration that biologics should have 55% penetration within the new systemics. Now you're dropping this percentage to around 40%, whereas you mentioned in the past that the competition environment has improved and we've seen some developments across JAKs that back that. What's the main explanation for that?
Thank you, Guillermo. I will take it. So the last estimation was about that the JAKs didn't got, they got several issues and several safety problems in the U.S., why we saw that we have a completely different approach from the European regulatory environment in Europe. So for this reason, and we also think that dermatologists, although at the moment they are scared with the side effect of the JAKs, but in the long term, maybe they will start working, understanding how the JAKs are working. So we said that we want to be in a very prudent way, And being prudent, we put on the 40%, but still the potential is on the 450 million, like we said at the beginning. Maybe Karl, you want to comment something on the side effect profile of the JAKs, or what do you think the dermatologists are going to think about that?
I mean, I would say, I would echo what you said. I think at the moment, given the safety profile, there is of course concern. Yeah, as we see from the FDA, basically, you know, discussing the whole class with respect to the safety profile. There could be also then situation where then individual dermatologists get used to it, maybe in more severe patients or patients for whatever reason don't like or don't want to biologics. That is always very difficult to predict, and that's why I think the market share prediction is more on the conservative side and makes sense at this stage.
Thank you, Karl.
And our last question comes from the line of Jaime Escribano from Banco Santander.
Hello. Hi, good morning. So a couple of questions from my side. Regarding the pipeline, I remember there was one product for alopecia and onychomycosis. I think you licensed out one of them. Well, just to have an update on what happened with these two products, if you have sold them or what are your plans on them? And then another question in terms of strategy. In the last call, I remember you were talking about taking a decision with the U.S. franchise, whether to make it bigger or even sell it, depending on the scale of this franchise going forward. And then also, in terms of strategy, you also mentioned a potential acquisition of a commercial platform in the Nordics or Eastern Europe in order to strengthen the European franchise, and also finally, the introduction in China. So, on these three topics, maybe can you give us an update if you have taken any decision or where, how should we think about these three strategies? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jaime. Let me answer the first one. I think you're referring to the finasteride and terbinafine products that were the legacy poly products. We have not launched those products, but we are licensing them out. We do see some small incoming milestone income for this. We found some partners for the finasteride in Eastern Europe, as well as a few countries within Europe, and the same thing for terbinafine. But these are not going to be significant movers of the company. We're just trying to maximize the value we can get out of them. I'll pass it over to Gianfranco for the strategy question.
Yeah, thank you, Jaime. So in terms of U.S., you know, the strategy is first to fix the foundation of the business. So we are working with our team in order to make a sustainable business for the future. We are not in any discussion about selling the franchise, like you were mentioning. The goal today is fixing and making it bigger. And then, you know, we are always looking for some opportunistic opportunities that may arise, but it should be in something that, you know, we can afford and make this happen, like something in a boutique way. In terms of potential expansion in Europe, yes, you are absolutely right. We said that we want to own the European region. So we are, you know, working in order to expand our presence in the Nordics and the CE with a very, you know, clever model focusing on biologics. And that will be more, you know, more exhaustive maybe in the months to come. And for China, that's concerned. So we are starting, you may remember, the phase three clinical trial of Seysara. We are waiting for the first patient in any day soon. And in terms of go-to-market model, depends. So if you are going to have only Seysara, for sure you need to have some, you know, partnership. But we are also working very hard in order to build a portfolio in China. Again, very early days, and I will be more precise in the months to come. Thank you, Jaime.
Thank you very much.
We now have a question from the line of Matthew Weston from Credit Suisse.
Thank you. It's a big picture question, and you may say I'm fishing too much for 2022 guidance, and that's not really the intention. But I'm aware that after today's call, there's going to be a very strong focus on the cost trends in the medium term. but it also comes on a quarter where revenue missed expectations by maybe 4%. And I know you've laid out the strength in October and the seasonality, but the question is a big picture one about consensus revenue expectations into 22 and 23. I wondered if management basically were comfortable with those numbers, or whether or not you felt there was more of a revenue story than the market was giving you credit for, which gave you the confidence in the cost investment that you're making that obviously you've outlined so clearly, Mike. I just don't know whether you can give us any comfort on the top line or maybe even outperformance on the top line to address some of the concerns that will emerge around costs.
Yeah, so Matt, I think you're probably reading a little bit too much into everything. I think, you know, we had a Q3 which had a normal summer period. I'm not sure the market saw the summer the normal way we would have seen it. Especially when you look at last year, last year's Q3 was a little bit better, but Q2 was horrible. But, you know, some of that was COVID impact. You know, we're not uncomfortable with the consensus revenue out there. We do expect to continue a good trend for the core net sales. I would remind everyone that we will have the deferred income dropping off completely next year, so keep that in mind. So, you know, headline sales will not grow as fast as the core sales, but we should be able to maintain a reasonably similar trend into 22 that you see in 2021 for the core sales. What we do have is the need to invest more. We've got all of these launches and opportunity, and we don't want to starve them. And we're coming off 2 years of lower expenses because COVID, you know, restricted the activities, not only us, but all of the companies could do. I think you may see that in other companies' trends as well, is that you'll get back more to a normalization as we go forward, whereas the last 18 months have been really severely impacted by COVID restrictions in terms of your ability to invest. The R&D situation is unique to us, and it's just because of an inflection point in the way we have to finance our pipeline, particularly as, you know, lebrikizumab has been a milestone deal up till now and hasn't really run through our R&D part of our P&L. So I don't think there's a necessarily a big revenue issue here. I do think that, you know, the product mix and gross margin is probably not what the consensus expects. And there we do have to expect there'll be some adjustment of that.
Very clear, Mike. Many, many thanks indeed.
No further questions. I will now hand the conference back to Pablo Di Fasson for any closing comments.
Thank you, Yola. We are now going to close our Q&A session, and with this, we will complete our conference today. We want to thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.